where we bring you thought leaders from around the world so you can share their inspirational stories and empowering practical tools on spirituality, mindset, self-love, being master of your own reality, purpose, business and lifestyle, and so much more. Everything from these beautiful people is so heart-centered and so freaking wise and so damn valuable that people usually pay really big bucks for their coaching. And I bring it to you for free so that you can have the most inspired life possible. So listen ahead for our latest guest, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hello and welcome to another episode of An Inspired Life, where we find freedom and meaning by embracing our divine essence, which is so good. Like, divine essence is so perfect for what we're talking about today. We have Dr. Ricky Jane Adams on the show today. She's from the Lightworker Institute, and she's talking to us today about intuitive intelligence, which I feel is like connecting to our divine essence and actually hearing the messages and the signs and allowing us to live our life from the intelligence of that intuition. Welcome, Ricky Jane.
Thank you, dear one. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like it's, you know, I've been waiting a long time to get this chance to chat with you. So it's a great privilege to be here.
I feel like our souls have been in love since they first met. And I've got to say, like, I really, like, I want the listeners to know, I really love this woman that we're talking to today. I've had a couple of readings and sessions with Ricky Jane. I've been to two of her events, and my ability to connect to my own intuition, already having been an intuitive guide and kind of just like knowing that that's what I was born with and rolling with it and trusting in it. This has given me, permission, I guess, and a system and a framework to be able to connect to my intuition and trust it in a way that I just didn't know was possible before. Like, I remember in January this year having my first ever past life reading and really wanting one and being like blown away by, oh my gosh, like, you know, it was just incredible. And now I can do them for other people, and I learned that because of you. So rocks my world.
Yeah. And it's so empowering to know that you have that power, you know, that it's not special, and yet it is incredibly special. And I think that's the beautiful paradox of intuition, is that it is insanely ordinary and divinely singular. And for each of us, it's a highly personal relationship.
Insanely ordinary and divinely, I don't know what you said, but like, I just went like insanely ordinary and divinely like extraordinary. I think it's so, you're so right about that. Like, you, the way that you speak about intuition is that it's like, it's just what we were all born with, that it's not one person who has it more than the other. Can you tell us some more about your, I guess, your unique perspective on intuition?
Yes, I would love to. I would love to. You know, I love talking about this stuff. And I love talking about it because there is so much misconception about intuition. You know, I still get asked, you know, am I intuitive? Do I have that inside of me? And I, you know, it is mundane to the point of boringness. We are all six sensories. All that has happened is that we have been born into a time and place where being intuitively connected is not taught to us. We're not raised to believe it. You know, I use this analogy that if you have a child, you know, these stories of a child who was raised by wolves, you know, for whatever extraordinary reasons that happened, they will never be able to form words because their tongue didn't learn language early enough. Mm. And it isn't that the child can't speak. It's just that the wolves didn't speak English, so no one told the child to speak. And it is exactly the same with our intuition. It is our sixth sense. It is born within us. But just because it is our sixth sense and it is ours innately doesn't mean that we automatically all have an easy access to it. And in fact, it's the rare exception is the person who is born with their intuition window wide open. And that can often be very traumatic, because if a child is born into a family where there is no understanding and no cultural acceptance of their gifts, they can be very traumatized. And you often hear people say that they had to shut that shit down because they thought they were mad. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in our mental institutions who are simply wide open intuitives and have no idea how to manage that. So if we simply look at that, the intuition has not been taught to us rather than it is not there, then that is a much more profound starting place. Where we go from there is that it is a privilege. And if you want to partner with your intuition in a real and applied way, you must commit yourself with discipline, or what Vishen Lakhiani calls blissipline, because the end result is bliss. That if you are willing to commit to the practice of developing your intuitive muscle, your life will be beyond your wildest dreams. And all you have to do is show up every day with a commitment and a willingness. You don't even need to know how. You just have to be willing. But many people think that intuition is special. There's only a few people who've got it. Those people just were born with it because they're 17th generation psychics or whatever. You know, I make this point in my manual when you come and study with me, is that we are all multi-generational psychics and intuitives. It's just that perhaps none of your previous generations knew, so they didn't tell you. It's just mundane. Where it gets really exciting is where you make that commitment to meet your intuition, and that's where you can take your life to extraordinary levels.
And so what does it look like in your life and in the people who you've seen around you who actually have this partnership with their sixth sense and their intuition? What does that like practically, what does that look like?
So intuition is the language of the soul. And when we're talking about soul consciousness, we are talking about oneness or unity with all that there is. So intuition, as I say, and you would have heard me say this a lot, is just a symptom. Intuition is a symptom of overcoming the belief in separation. What does that feel like? What does it feel like to return to oneness? Well, that feels like bliss, because you suddenly know that you are one with all that there is, and you are that which you seek. You are the divine made manifest. And so when you are activating your intuition, you are simply learning to trust that you are one with the universe, because you can't doubt that connection and open your intuition. Where there is fear, there cannot be intuition, because the requirement of an intuition being activated in someone is the willingness to surrender to something greater than themselves, which paradoxically is themselves. The oneness is what we are surrendering to. So you are learning to communicate with the field of infinite possibility, and therefore, of course, you know the answers to your life. How can you not? You are now one with the infinite, and therefore life feels like flow. So I don't need to micromanage my life. I can be in a co-creative partnership. And that partnership, you know, a really good partnership feels like someone always has your back, yeah? Someone there who's going to catch me if I fall. There's always someone at my back. And that is what it feels like to live with activated intuition.
So can you maybe share with us like a couple of examples of where you're like, oh, thanks, universe, you just had my back there?
Okay, well, the first thing that jumps into my mind is, so I describe myself as a spiritual entrepreneur. So Lightworker Institute has a big vision, and it is a training institute that I see going much more widely than just me as one person. But I sort of knew that that vision was there, and I had no idea what that meant. I just felt it, yeah? So then I guess about a year ago, so this time last year, I wrote down in my journal somewhere my intentions for what I wanted to kind of create. And I didn't put any time restrictions on them, because I'm aware that the universe, as my partner, might have a better idea. But I wrote down that I wanted to train people to do what I do. And I let it go, because I had no capacity. I had no time. I was already fully booked. I didn't have any reason to believe I could make that happen. And then in a few months later, in March, I ran an intuitive intelligence workshop. And afterwards, one of the women who attended emailed me and said, "Ricky, can you teach me to do what you do?" And within 5 minutes of receiving that email, I had downloaded the entire curriculum. I just wrote back to her and was like, "Yes, and this is what it will look like, and this is when it's going to start, and this is what it's called." It was like flow. It just hit me with this beautiful sense of absolute certainty. This was the right time for the next step, even though it wasn't in my 90-day plan, it wasn't in my 12-month plan, it was just simply an intention. And then the universe showed me when I was ready. And if I had written that down in December of last year and then stressed about it and tried to make it happen and panicked about it and probably chucked a whole bunch of money at it to try and make it work, it probably wouldn't have worked. But you know what? When you line up with the universe in that way, when you co-create, it does flow to you. It is effortless flow. And you know, my business in 2 years has become a six-figure business because of that commitment to partnering with the divine. So, you know, walking my talk effectively, that I am not going to sit in a 3D reality, which is really, to put it in another way, a human paradigm, in my fear, in my own bullshit, and expect the universe to do anything for me. You know, we can talk a little bit more about that if you like, that idea of matching the frequency of what you want to be bringing into your life. But effectively, intuition feels like flow because you stop being afraid. And when we are no longer in fear, we're highly intuitive, but we're also in a state of love, and love feels open and free flowing. Yeah.
Do you know, just a couple of days ago, I think I was saying to my partner how this house is so beautiful, and my beautiful pug Claude passed away recently, and we had such beautiful times in this house because we live right across from some falls. And there was this one house that we'd applied for earlier, and we'd prayed and said, like, you know, we'd love this house, this or something better for the greatest good, and didn't get it and couldn't understand why we didn't get it. And this house is a lot cheaper than what we would have been paying there, and better. It's more homely. Claude got to have a better life for his last few months. It's those things. It's like when you get the rejection letter from the house that you wanted, it's knowing that there's a reason for it and that there's a greater plan for it all.
Yeah.
We still get to set our desires, don't we? Like, we can tell the universe what we want, and then they are giving us what we want, but sometimes it looks packaged in a different way.
Absolutely. And that is, you know, another condition for intuition to flourish is trust. You have to trust that there is a greater good, that you are a divine piece of a benevolent universe that is always working on your behalf. And if you doubt that, you need to go and look at where that doubt is coming from. Very often that doubt is coming from a feeling of unworthiness. Who am I to believe that I am a divine piece of a benevolent universe? But often that doubt is coming from fear of letting go of control. You know, that's the thing where we often turn up to God or to the universe negotiating, you know, if you love me, you will give me that house that I applied for because I know best. And true partnership, true intuition, true flow is where you are willing to absolutely surrender, even though you feel perhaps confusion in the moment. In the fullness of time, you will see the pattern. That's why we call intuition symbolic sight. Because you're not seeing the literal meaning of things, you're seeing the bigger symbolic picture. And unless you are willing to let go, which is a very difficult thing for us to do, you will not meet your intuitive power in all its fullness. And it's practice, it's practice, it's practice. This is the thing, it's not sexy. When people say to me, you know, how do I increase my intuition? It's actually not like buying the right crystal or getting the right green smoothie. It's actually just turning up every day with discipline and working the muscle. And, you know, we will pretty much do anything we can not to have discipline in our lives. You know, generally we are pretty lazy, especially when it comes to the ephemeral. You know, this idea, it always makes me laugh, Kiara, when people say, oh, I'm too busy to meditate. And it's like that, you know, Gay Hendricks talks about this in The Big Leap, Einstein time versus Newtonian time. We do not understand that if we actually start to merge with oneness, if we start to go into meditation in a daily way, we actually extend time because we create time. That's what Einstein time is. You literally are no longer limited by the clock. You are expanding. And we know when we're in flow, you would have had this experience, that time seems to have no meaning. If you spend a day doing what you love, it'll feel like 2 minutes. If you spend a day doing what you hate, it can feel like a year. So we actually, it's learning to be absolutely willing to look at the world for what it truly is, which is energy or vibrating particles of matter that are not solid and fixed. And that applies to time as much as anything. Time is a concept. And so if we're willing to surrender the kind of human way of thinking, then we will truly be able to enter into applied intuition, or what I call intuitive intelligence, as our informing philosophy.
Mm-hmm. There's so much in everything that you're saying that I'm like, whoa, it's really cool. It's so cool. The time thing though, I just like, it reminded me, there was this one day before I left for a month in Bali that I wrote my list out the night before, and I was like, I've got a lot to do tomorrow. And then I kept just really believing the concept that I had so much time to do it all. And I woke up the next day, everything went smoothly, and I felt like I just had this abundance of time. And I feel like I wish that I could see that I can create time, and that time is just a concept. I'm not there yet, still opening up to that.
Just practice.
But I really do see that, you know, sometimes an hour here or an hour there can be so different. So there must be something in our perception of that hour that changes that hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, people like Doreen Virtue talk about that lovely kind of experiment. If you're driving to the airport and you're running late, stop looking at the clock. Cover the clock up and just be certain of the outcome, that you will arrive in time to board your flight. Mm. If you are in a position where you are fearful that you don't have enough time, challenge yourself to stop looking at the clock and actually just see the outcome that you want, and then make it so. And that, you know, that's such a simple experiment. I think Gay Hendricks talks about that as well, that, you know, we walk around feeling like life is happening to us. And that is simply an addictive thinking pattern that we're born into. We're born into this collective soup that says you are a victim of your circumstance. You're limited by the laws of the physical universe. You know, you are not free, and you're just waiting for things to happen to you. And when we start to partner with the universe, when we start to use intuitive intelligence as our informing mode of reviewing or being in the world, then we are no longer stuck in that. Now, some people will resist that with all their might, because that's great responsibility. Yeah.
And I love the way that you talk about responsibility as well, as in that, I think I've heard you talk about it before, that you kind of, when you can take responsibility, it means that you actually can have an impact on those things, rather than playing the victim and being like, someone else is doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, Marianne Williamson says, you know, some people would rather die than change their mind. And that is really what we're doing. You know, I feel like we are in that same sort of paradigm as when Galileo was trying to explain that the world was not flat.
Mm.
You know, what we know from quantum physics to be true is that we live in a plastic environment, in the sense that it is totally malleable, and that the act of observing it changes it. Now, even the great leaders of science of the world now still will not engage with quantum physics. There is so much fear about really taking on at a practical level what we know to be true because of what quantum physics has shown us. And that is really the rejection of personal power. So if I know that my observation of my world, aka the attitude that I bring to what I'm seeing, the story that I tell about the events of my life, will determine the quality of my life, then, you know, that leaves you nowhere to hide. You can't go and say, oh, but that was because of that person, and I got bad parents and shit, everything's bad. Like, it's not my fault. You know, we would prefer to die, some of us, than change our mind to see what we know now to be true, that science has been telling us for about 100 years, is that we are absolutely informing the quality of lives that we are living in very practical ways. You know, I've talked to you in the workshops about Planck time. Now, Planck time just blows my mind. You know, Planck time tells us, or hypothesizes, that we move in and out of form multiple times per second because we are vibrating particles of matter, yes. So if we are vibrating particles of matter, we go into formlessness, because that is what's happening with that vibration, multiple times per second. And that question then is, well, what informs our physical matter as how to reappear? And what informs it is our belief about it. Our belief is what determines our lives. This is not a Hallmark idea, Hallmark card idea. This is freaking science. And yet we will do everything in our power to keep our head in the sand because we are terrified of what that means.
Yeah.
That means I cannot blame anybody for anything.
Which is exactly what you and I did in our session on Friday, where I was saying something and I was allowed to just speak how I felt, right? And then you said, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but then you said stuff back and I was like, oh, I wouldn't know where to hide in this. Like, yeah. I did it the other day with my friend when we went to get frozen yogurt and she was like, this is so embarrassing, and like wanted to hide because it's personal responsibility. Like when you see it for the truth, at least you can do something about it. But I can understand how the truth is scary in the way that we have perceived it. But when you're in a supportive space with people who hold space just for the truth in a non-judgmental way, then it's just like, oh, look, here's this thing that I believed. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That doesn't have to be true anymore. And we can make a choice that's different from that.
Yeah. And the thing is that when you are doing that from the paradigm of intuitive intelligence or connected to your intuition, is that you also know that you're not doing it alone energetically. So you have the universe on your side, yeah? And the more you show up in fearlessness, the more the universe wants to show up in that way for you too. So more ease and grace comes into your life. So it's not constant struggle, not constant digging through the piles of shit. The piles of shit just seem to evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
And there is only blessing. And that is really the end point. That's why it's called bliss-ipline, because a little bit of discipline is going to get you a whole bunch of bliss.
Mm.
But yes, part of that discipline is with great power comes great responsibility. You want the power. You want to know that you are connected to the universe. You want to know that you are intuitive. But what do you need to do in return? And in return, you need to take ownership.
Mm.
And in doing that, you have the support of the universe at your back. So it's a win-win. Mm. And yet people would still prefer to abdicate responsibility and keep pretending that they can't hear their intuition. You know, that's a lovely thing that I often get told. It's like, oh, I can never hear my intuition. I'm like, bullshit, you don't want to hear your intuition. Because your intuition is telling you that that shitty relationship you're in needs to end, or that the way that you are abusing your body with food or drugs or alcohol has got to be over, or that the fact that you have done a shit job for the last 20 years that you hate is no longer going to work.
Mm.
The change terrifies us.
Yeah.
But, you know, intuition is just a constant flow of information about change. So it's just because vibrating particles of matter, which is what we are doing what? They're constantly changing.
Mm.
Nothing is solid, Kiara.
Mm.
And we walk around believing the world is solid. And that is the habit that we need to break.
Mm. I was talking with my partner just this morning about that, how we understand that, you know, there's this law of gravity that we cannot see, but we believe because scientists have told us it is true. And so we can like see that all of the things are being kept in place in the world by this law of gravity. But we find it so hard to believe in these laws of the universe that actually govern how everything happens and who we, like how what we be affects our environment around us.
Yeah. You know, the intelligence of the universe is mind-blowing. It is, you know, there is not a computer in the world that can imitate the elegance and the sophistication of that universal consciousness, that intelligence that is working overtime to support us. And because we cannot grasp it conceptually, we reject it because it's much easier to stay in the darkness than to have our minds blown by the light, the truth of the light. And it is, you know, it is evidenced everywhere around us where we appear to be becoming less and less conscious politically, you know, the way we eat, the way we treat the planet, all of these things. It seems like we're at a crisis moment. And yet, you know, that crisis is suggestive of change, and from change, from chaos, comes the capacity for a new paradigm. So, you know, it's like, you know, things do need to reach sometimes a zenith or a crescendo so that we can give up faulty beliefs. And I feel like that's sort of where we're at. There's such an entrenched belief at an unconscious collective level around our victimhood, around our belief in solidness of matter, even when science is saying no, not true, you have more capacity than you know. You know, we do need to sort of see the breaking of the system in order for the new paradigm to emerge. So, you know, I don't get worried about what's happening in world politics. I don't worry about the way the planet's being destroyed or not destroyed, because it is only a measure of my consciousness. And I say this, you know, again and again, if you want to save the world, meet your own fear. Do not turn up on the picket lines. Do not contribute more anger and rage to a broken system. You are a microcosm of the universe. You are all that there is. That is the condition for allowing intuition into your life, is to accept that you are one. So if you are one, be the change. You be the change. You go and meet your fear. You set the world free by not holding fear within your consciousness. And that will have a ripple effect that is so remarkable that we will be blown away. You know, we don't need 7 billion people to wake up. We just need a tipping point. So be the tipping point.
Yes, tipping point. Yeah. I just want to like second everything you say. It's so good. You talked about meeting the fear. How do we do that? Like, what are your tips for that?
Well, come and hang out with me for a weekend and we can dive deep into that. But if I was, you know, to the people who are listening today who go, okay, sure, what does that mean? Like that question, that great question. You know, the first thing is to find, you know, time, because our unconsciousness in our daily lives, which we call busyness, is actually how we avoid meeting ourselves. So the reason we go to meet our fear is not so that we can catalog our fear and get really intimate with it. That's what talking therapies do. We meet our fear so that we can release that fear and find who we truly are underneath that fear. And what we are is love. So we go to meet our fear so that we can be love. And, you know, there's profound tools available very widely and freely. My favorite, as you know, is EFT or tapping. That is totally free, totally available everywhere. Just Google it, you know, tapping for anxiety, tapping for fear, tapping for grief, tapping for this, tapping for that. You will find 1,000 videos on it. And that to me is obviously a divine gift from God, who downloaded that through whoever received it. Gary Craig, I think, was one of the first proponents of it, to give us our own tools to set ourselves free. And the way that that works is it works on the neuroplasticity of the brain. It rewires the neural pathways of the brain. So there's literally nowhere for that fear to be. So you tap on that, and I won't go into it now, but it can take 5 minutes and you can free yourself from a lifetime of guilt, shame, fear, loathing, doubt, grief. You know, it is unbelievably powerful, but it requires commitment. You have to be willing, when you feel shit, on your shittest day, to advocate for yourself.
And sometimes in the shitty parts, I'm aware that I'm in like grief mode now. So I've given myself, it's like only been a week. So I've given myself that time. But sometimes even when it's not grief, I'm just having a shitty day, I'm like more attached to the shitty day than I am to feeling good. And then when, as soon as I obviously become aware of that, I shift that. But it's so interesting that without that awareness, we don't realize we're actually keeping ourselves in the shittiness of the day, for lack of a better word right now. What do you suggest for that? Like, why do we do that and how do we stop doing that?
Because our ego is clever and brilliant, and it will, you know, I've mentioned Gay Hendricks before. His book, The Big Leap, is a profound text and not even necessarily spiritual. So you can pretty much give it to anybody and they'll read it and love it. But we have this thing called the upper limit problem, which is we can only permit ourselves to receive a certain amount of good stuff before our ego will have a setting where it's like, whoa, whoa, too much good. So you're having a really fabulous day for no reason at all. You're smiling at the trees, you're feeling light and joy filled, and suddenly you just have a really anxious thought about your bad relationship with someone that you know, haven't seen for 10 years, or the fact that you're not earning that exact amount of money that you think is success, or a cutting word from someone as you got off the bus. Like, ridiculous something will just bubble up. And we are attuned as a culture and a society to privilege our bad feelings. We will spend decades devoting ourselves to therapy around our pain and our suffering, but we don't have joy coaches. We don't say, how do I privilege my joy? Because we see our light-filled, high-vibing emotions as secondary, or, you know, silly or non-essential. you know, to be human is to suffer. Who would I be to give up my suffering? I'd be betraying the human tribe. You know, so we immediately believe the ego when it gives us a thought, which is simply trying to derail us. We've hit our upper limit of what we feel safe to receive. And that's basically because our subconscious, which is the basement of our consciousness, the subconscious basement is full of our fear stories. 95% of our life is lived through our subconscious basement, through that paradigm of fear. So we think we're making reasonable adult decisions about our life, and we're actually reacting to that fear basement. And the process of becoming more aware and awake is the process of meeting what's in that basement. Mm. Because the subconscious is not designed to hold fear. It's simply that we have defaulted to fear as our operating system.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be that way. But my darling, it takes so much courage. It takes so much personal commitment to change that story. And the day that you have met all your fear is the day that you'll be able to pop your clogs and go back to God, because that's all we're here to do, is to go and meet our fear and become free.
Mm.
And, you know, it gets so much easier when your intuition is activated, because you are so much more attuned to what it is that is actually going on. Mm. Know thyself. You know, that is how we begin the journey home. And so, yeah, space and time is another thing that you need to give to yourself. And not space and time doing stuff, but space and time for contemplation, deep reflection.
Mm.
And that is not something we privilege at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I hear you.
We reward doing.
Mm. Do you know, I just was interviewed before this interview myself, and they asked, like, how do I clear my beliefs or, like, faulty programming and stuff? And it used to be that I did timeline therapy, or that I saw someone else, and I still do. Mm-hmm. But I actually find that a lot of it comes now from just the simple observation, mm-hmm. that I'm like, oh, that is a silly idea. Like, that's not me. That's not the truth of me. And that can clear it. And some of it I clear by sitting quietly with myself and asking my guides, how can I clear this? Like, what is this here to teach me? And then once that's gone, like, once I know the lesson, it can be released. Or I can do some of the cool stuff that you've taught me, right? So it's interesting, like you talked about, it's so much easier once we've activated our intuition, because now I don't feel that I must go to someone else and give them the power to clear my fear.
Yep.
I can do that myself, like just by following my intuition. And sometimes my intuition is like, just go for a walk, like in nature, and that's fine. It'll be gone. And then other times it's like, do this really deep ritualistic ceremony with yourself. Like, just following our intuition makes it so much easier, I think.
Absolutely, because you're tapping into universal wisdom. Mm. That is your wisdom. You know, it also is, you have a storehouse of all the wisdom that you've collected from all your lifetimes, and you're pretty wise. You've done a lot of good shit in your lifetime, so why not let that wisdom come to you? Mm. But if we're always busy, we cannot hear it. And so when that's the other thing, when people say to me, I can't hear my intuition, it's like, well, what percentage of your day do you spend in silence? Because intuition is subtle. It isn't a loud neon sign. Sometimes it is, but very rarely. Mostly it's a subtle feeling that over time becomes loud, because it's, you just are in it. You are it. It isn't a thing that you do. It is who you are. It is you as one. But yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it is personal power again. You know, it's and that can be terrifying. That I might be the answer to my problems. How do I get a community around me who can pity me and share my suffering and be in my pain? And you probably heard me talk about this idea of meaning versus cause. And I think we have spent far too long as a society thinking that spirituality is self-awareness. So if I know the cause of my suffering, if I can tell you my story of when this pain began, how my father was mean to me, why I didn't get what I needed as a child, if I can map it, that somehow that's going to free me from it, which is absolute bullshit.
Mm.
What that does is it feeds the ego's desire to go, oh, yes, tell me more about your suffering and your pain. Oh, yes, that's terrible how that happened, isn't it? And you spend your time labeling your boxes of fear in the basement. Meaning, on the other hand, is where you're having a great day and suddenly a shitty thought comes into your head and the day's ruined. And you're like, okay, what is the meaning of this? Now, you could go into the cause. You could say, well, let's track this feeling back. Oh, yes, I remember being betrayed by the man that I loved and blah, blah, blah. And you can do that till the cows come home. You won't feel any better. Mm. But if you look at it, why? What's the meaning of this? Okay, well, why is this serving me? How is it showing up for me? So I change my story. I do not see my bad days as evidence of my failure or unworthiness or having been abandoned by God. I see them as information. This is good information. I have some fear stuck in my energetic system that I haven't met yet. Okay, what do I need to go and meet it? Okay, well, what I want to do is today I'm going to pray. I don't know how to do this on my own, God, but I am willing. And as you say, that can be enough. Mm. The willingness to surrender your grief, your pain, your suffering. But instead what we do is we become deeply defensive of our fear and our suffering, and we use it as an excuse to not be in the world or to be angry with people or, you know, to be unkind or cruel or to justify our inertia or you know, we go into bat for our fear. Mm. And we protect it like it's a child. And we do not have that same defensiveness about our joy and our happiness.
Mm.
And it's just about shifting our mind. So I have an exercise that you can see on my YouTube channel. I can share the link with you, where it is an intuition activator. So it increases your intuition. But what you do is when you feel joy, for whatever reason, say your kid gives you a drawing of your family and it's everyone looks lovely and it makes your heart smile, or you know, you think about Claude, who we will devote this episode to. You have an experience of joy in your heart, whatever reason is there. Instead of just sitting on that little bit of joy, mm-hmm. you expand, you take that joy and you just keep adding other thoughts that bring you pleasure and bliss. You just keep building it, you keep building it and building it, and you let it become disproportionate so that it consumes you, and you break all these barriers between you and the universe by letting that joy just overwhelm you. You actively expand your joy feeling because that's what we do with fear. Realize it.
Do you know, I was just about to say that we have this thing called the refractory period, where after we get angry, our brain gives us constant messages to say, this is why you're angry and this is why you're right. And yeah, you should be angry, and just validates that anger or fear, because fear is just under anger anyway, right? And so our brain naturally does that for the negative states, but we don't naturally do that yet for the more positive states. So I love that. It's like rewiring, retraining.
Absolutely. And it is just discipline. It is just not defaulting to the dominant paradigm, which says your fearful emotions are valid and suffering is worthy, but actually saying, well, what if I give as much, if not more, if not 10 times, a billion times more credence to my good feelings? Because something also happens to our brain the more we do that. We literally are telling it a different story. We're producing a different set of hormones. We change our capacity to even feel the heavier, baser emotions. Now, this is not bullshit pop psychology where I'm feeling shit and I tell you everything's great. Mm. Absolute acceptance of where you are is vital to make any change. You've got to be with what you're feeling. Mm. But it's the privileging of it that is the problem. So we do that thing exactly as you say. I love that description, where we then pile on the shit and we go, well, look at all the reasons and all the shit in my life and blah, 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 blah. And if only this hadn't happened and blah, blah, blah. And we privilege that feeling rather than just being with it. Because if you take the story out of your feeling, it is neither good nor bad. It just is. Mm. And it's information, more importantly. It's showing me where there is a meaning, something I have missed up till now. And now I'm getting that meaning, and that's brilliant. If you go to the cause, you're only perpetuating your own suffering. And it is, you know, it is absolutely a requirement. All of this is how you activate your intuition in a way that is intuitive intelligence. So it's intuitive intelligence is where that is the filter or the frame through which I am viewing the world. Mm. I'm no longer viewing it through the human 3D reality, which says everything's shit, everybody's out to get you, ultimately all the world is fucked and we might as well stay home. And you know, and you suddenly use intuitive intelligence as your gaze on the world, and you're looking with symbolic sight, and you can see that your bad days are not bad, they are simply part of the cycle. And that there will be days where you're up and days where you're down, but if you take judgment out of it, that is just life happening.
Oh my gosh, everything that you say is amazing. It's so good. And I can't believe we have to finish up soon. Like, no. But I really would love to know about discipline.
Yes.
Before we finish up, because actually just a quick note, like for the listeners, I know that we haven't gone, okay, how do you do intuition? Because if it hasn't been obvious enough yet, intuition isn't something that you actually have to do. Intuition is always there.
Yes.
We're always receiving intuitive messages. We often just don't choose to hear them or haven't practiced hearing them.
Yes.
So all of this meeting of your fear and discipline and those sorts of things are how you do intuition, because it's there. You're just getting the stuff out of the way that's not allowing you to hear it right now. So just a side note in case it wasn't obvious.
That was a beautiful recap.
because otherwise they'll be like, okay, so we've just spent like 45 minutes. Where was the intuition part? If the intuition is all of this so that you can actually hear the stuff that's already there or see or however you receive intuitive messages. But I'd love to know about your discipline.
Yeah.
What you do for discipline.
So my discipline is absolute... You know, it is absolute authenticity. And look, there are good days and bad days, of course, with discipline. When I am in service, so on the days where I am turning up to work for others, it's much easier to be in discipline because there is that sense of I have a responsibility to turn up as the purest vessel for my clients or my students. You know, meditation, without doubt. And I have to tell you, I'm probably in like my 25th year of meditating. And probably in the last 6 months, it's got truly blissful. Okay. So I don't want people to say to me, I can't meditate, because you also can't speak French the first time you try. But that doesn't mean you stop. And people have this idea that you're either a meditator or you're not. And it's such a bullshit excuse. It's such a great way to let yourself off the hook. What you might need to do is explore different ways to practice your meditation and to go from potentially needing to begin with an active practice, perhaps walking with consciousness, and then you can move towards sitting on the pillow and being able to hold yourself in stillness. Now, when I go into meditation, it's like instantly I am with God, or whatever language you use around that. And there are days where I actually don't want to be anywhere else. Mm. And it makes me sad that I have children and they expect to be fed, because that means I have to leave my meditation. Tapping every day. Every time I feel fear, I tap on that shit, because if I don't, I'm simply giving it permission. So even if I wake up in a bad mood and I don't know why, or there's good reasons like I didn't have enough sleep, I still tap on it, because there's nothing that tapping doesn't work on. So physical symptoms as much as emotional and spiritual symptoms. And that is part of that clearing out. You know, for me, things like chanting, burning incense, those little external indicators that remind me that I am energy first, physical second. You know, I have up on my wall, you know, when I wake up in the morning, what Wayne Dyer had, good things are happening. You know, I have notes around myself to tell my subconscious the truth about my nature, that I am infinite. And, you know, most importantly, I serve, because service is the way that you get over yourself, because you know it's not just about you. And, you know, it is. And, you know, in a bigger picture sense, it's required me to step away from believing that I had to be a particular kind of wife and mother and giving myself permission to be exactly who I am, which is quite an apathetic wife and mother. You know, God bless them. They're all wonderful. I couldn't live without them. But I don't really want to clean or cook or do any of those things. And making peace with that has been truly peace-giving. Because so often we are trying to fulfill what we think other people's expectations of us are, and we're actually not being authentic in any way. And, you know, no one left me when I stopped cooking and cleaning. They're all still hanging around, and it all is much, much better for me. And there's much more joy in my life because I have been unafraid to ask and demand what I need. You know, my path of service is the core of my life, and my family are wonderful and I adore them, but I know that without being able to honor my path of service, that I'd be really mean to them. So, so not being afraid, I think, is part of that, definitely, that discipline. Mm. Oh, and also, last thing, I know I've talked a lot, you have to keep your mind attuned to the frequency you want to be living at. And one of the most profound ways is to read sacred texts every day. Just have them beside your bed, pick it up, read a page a day or a night. You have to keep yourself attuned, especially in the early days, because it's so easy to fall back into the human unconsciousness. Mm. So having your sacred texts and keeping them with you and bringing your consciousness back to the light every day, absolutely.
Mm, yeah, just continually reminding yourself that you are divine and of your true nature, because we get so many reminders of other stuff that's not true around us all day.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are so freaking amazing. Thank you. Honestly, it's so, like, I could feel my consciousness expand just from talking to you. And I know that my listeners will feel exactly the same way. So thank you.
Right back at you, my darling. You're just pure light. And it's very inspiring to talk to you. So thank you for letting me rant on for a while.
We could do this forever, couldn't we?
I know, right? We should do it again.
We should. So I know everyone is going to want to come and find out more about you and the Lightworker Institute and all of the amazing things that you share. How do they find you, my love?
Well, lightworkerinstitute.com.au for sure. Mm-hmm. And I have a beautiful group on Facebook called I Am a Lightworker, all caps, can't miss it. And that space is for anyone who is either identifies as being a lightworker or is lightworker curious. It's a very open and non-judgmental space where you can access huge amounts of support, really free, amazing, high-quality support from people who have the same kind of belief as you. And otherwise, Facebook, where else do I hang out? Instagram, love my Instagram, all Lightworker Institute. And if anyone wants to contact me and have a chat about spending more time, or from February, my intuitive intelligence tour is going around Australia, that weekend workshop to get fearless, basically, how to get more intuitive, get more fearless. I'd love for you to join me on that too.
Mm. And we will actually put a link into the description. I don't usually do that, but I really want people to go to those events. So we will actually do that, because it's just phenomenal, and the space that you create is amazing. So I really recommend for everyone to go ahead and check out Ricky Jane and the Lightworker Institute, because you're gonna see more of them, isn't it? Which is really cool. Yeah. So Ricky Jane, each time that we do a podcast, we ask the listeners to come on over to the Facebook page, facebook.com/aninspiredlife with Kiara, and to tell us one thing. And it could be it's different each time, and I'd love for you to pick what you would like them to come and tell us about. What conversation would you like to start over there after this?
So one thing that I want to ask of your group.
Yeah, like one fear that they've realized that they could go and meet, or one intuitive thing that they realized that they picked up on that week. Actually, that's a cool one. So you can pick. I'll let you pick.
Yeah, I love that idea though of when have you felt the universe speaking through you? You know, that's a pretty proactive thing as well, because I think that's the thing, it's very subtle, so it's easy to dismiss it. But when we think about it, we reflect and go, oh yeah, that time that my life got saved because I didn't walk under that bus or whatever, you know, that reminds us that this is actually already happening. We're already it. Yeah.
You're such a born teacher. You're just like, I will teach you more as I tell you this. It's so good. I love it. Just hang out with Ricky Jane, rub her arm, and stuff will rub off on you. Everyone, come on over to facebook.com/aninspiredlife with Kiara, so that you can tell us, when did the universe nudge you? When did you hear your intuition? And then I feel like as we focus more on it, we're going to see more of it as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's unavoidable.
Yep. And as well, if you liked this episode, please hit share so that more people can realize that their intuition is already there and it's just a symptom. So let's get rid of the stuff that's blocking it. so that they can go and meet their fear and then meet their intuition, which would be cool. So please hit share and come on over to iTunes so you can give us a 5-star review and tell everyone about why you like the show as well, so more people can hear. Thank you so much, Ricky Jane. You are phenomenal. You are the epitome of a light worker. Although I guess you probably wouldn't like epitome. We are, I think, all light workers. Let's just.
Yeah.
But I love that you're forging the path for us. Thank you.
Great pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to the An Inspired Life podcast with me, Kiara O'Leary. I'm so excited to be guiding you on your own journey of living your own version of an inspired life. Head over to aninspiredlife.com.au if you want access to more inspiring stories, tips, tools, frameworks, anything that I can possibly give you that will help you live a more fulfilling life. I've put on there, and so much of it is free. And there's also empowering life solutions, from how to make your breakup the best thing that ever happened to you, to the Sacred Business Academy, taking it from an idea to your life's work in only 11 weeks. So I hope you can head on over to aninspiredlife.com.au and find something that will help you and guide you for where you're at right now. Thank you. My name's Kiara again, and I am so grateful to be guiding you on this journey. See you next time.